Shall we begin? So first on the agenda, a call to order. Roll calls.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Georgiana Schuster.
Here.
Sue Suter. Deb Rouge. Gail Kennedy.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Next up is the approval of the agenda from last month's meeting, which is found in our board packet. Thank you. All in favor?
Do we have a second?
A second. Pardon me. May I have a second, please? Thank you. All in favor of
aye.
Passing? All opposed? Passes. Approval of the agenda. On to number four, citizen input, public participation. Would anyone like to contribute anything today? If not, then we will move on to the president's comments. Unfortunately, she is not here.
Do you want to make comments?
No. Okay. I will leave that to you.
Surprise, you're the president. So I will make some comments. I have a couple of announcements, and then I just want to take a little stroll through the agenda real quick. So the expo is Saturday, March 28th, from 9 to 2. I think everyone here is involved in some way. If you're not involved and you're thinking about becoming a sponsor or an exhibitor, that information is all due this Friday. There is a webinar, an Arc of Illinois webinar on Tuesday, February 25th. They just changed the date right after I registered. So we know Tuesday, February 25th at 2 o'clock. This is a webinar on the state transition plan to comply with home and community-based services rules of CMS. So as you know, the HCBS new rules and regs went into effect in 2014 and 15, but the transition to integrated settings was an aspirational rule, and so states were given a lot of time and then additional time, I think, to 2022. Wait, the deadline is this March for state transition plans to be submitted and approved. So right now there's a proposed state transition plan, and we can make public comments on it through the month. And so if you're interested in the content or how to make comments, the webinar is a guide to that. The relevant section of the transition plan is in this board packet, so we'll get to that in a second. There is also legislation being introduced, which is, I think it's really positive. It has a big price tag, and so I'm told it's not going to go anywhere. This would increase provider rates by 20% for DD services, and the price tag is approximated $267 million. 75% of new funds are supposed to go to wages and benefits for staff, and then the rest can be used for admin and operating costs. And the purpose of the legislation, I think there are a few versions of it, but it's to ensure wage rate components are at least 145% of minimum wage. So I think this is very positive. I'm going to push for it. I'm going to, as I always do, push right past the conversation about salary compression and how no one can do this. And if the issue is $270 million is not easily available to the state, who will be surprised to hear that? So I still think it's important to push for this. It's the right thing to do. It's been the right thing to do for decades. Just to walk through the agenda real quick, we have at first an update on the mini grant, and Kim and Chris have devoted almost all of every day to fulfilling the promises. Maybe we are getting other things done too, but you all have been really devoted to this. It's, you know, so we're sort of presenting an overview of some of the obstacles, but also a little bit of the joy. And that the joy is when people show up and or we get to meet them in person and see just how people do this with no services. What are the strengths that they have that are helping them be safe without services? So it's interesting, resilient families. And then there's a mistake, well, it's just a very poorly worded paragraph in that memo, so when we get there, I'll explain it. Then we have two presentations. One is a mid-year report on the new part of the RPC program, and then the other is from Spring Health. Did they make it? Oh, good. Hi. So that will be interesting. This is not an agency funded by us, but it is funded by DHS. So thank you for coming. And then we have a brief update on the property tax case ruling and the impact on budget. And then there is the highlight to me is the list of applications for funding, because it's time for us to start reviewing applications. I've been working on program summaries. It might be well, if you're in the mood, to have a discussion about what you would like from us for a review of applications. There are all kinds of different ways to do that. So right after the list of applications is the board direction agenda item, in case you choose to have a discussion like that. Then there's a whole bunch of information from the state, including the priorities of DD, of the Division of DD, and a little bit about the state transition plan. And then there's the appendix from the transition plan itself, which is most closely related to the DD waiver programs. Then Kim has organized a bunch of data from the recent sets of agency service reports. The first are the actual reports with comments. Those are always interesting, like that. Comments are the most interesting, but it shows, you know, where everybody's at in terms of the services and how close they are to benchmarks. And then there are charts for each program relating the service activities to participants and also to hours. And then we have meeting schedules, and there's an important change in the meeting schedule, so I'll remember that. Then mental health board input, staff reports, board announcements, and then a closed session. And the motion that appears on the revised agenda is slightly incorrect, so I have written it down correctly for both of us, and we'll be able to do that. And then when we go into closed session, it will be quick, but when we come back, the only thing left for the board to do is adjourn. So if people don't want to stick around for the adjournment, I will understand. Okay, that's it.
All right. So we've been through president's comments, which I had none. Thank you, Lynn, for your comments. Approval of, actually, I made a mistake. We are now approving the board minutes from last month, from January. Is there anyone who would like to make a call to action? Thank you. Do we have a second? Thank you. And now may we go ahead and approve those again? All in favor?
Aye.
No opposed? Let's move on to new business. The mini grant updates and requests on pages 4 through 7 of our packet. So there was a fair amount of information in here. Before I make any comments, Lynn, do you want to summarize the information in here or have anything to say?
Do the two of you want to say anything about this experience? A whole lot of it is just summarizing what we're going through, and behind that summary is something happens every day. And some days lots of things happen, so it could have been a 500-page memo, but happily it wasn't. The mistake that I made is on page 7. Some of the applicants have asked us to ask you for either changes within the budget that was approved for them or reconsideration of the full request. or reconsideration of part of a request. So those are all presented on page 6 and 7. And then there's a paragraph after that about affordability, and it's a pretty opaque paragraph. What it means is that you decided in December not to reallocate $19,116 for this year, but just to leave it. So that money is theoretically available. And then we also underexpended in 2019. We have waiting for more bills from the county, at least one more bill from the county, before we can give an actual amount, but maybe by $30,000. So for this board, that's $30,000 underspent in the professional services line. So that's also money that's available. And within the mini grant project itself, we have spent less than expected by $1,090 because we can give you that number because we can't spend more than approved on anybody, but we can spend less than approved, and once they're satisfied, we can say, well, we've saved $1,090. So the whole point of this paragraph is these requests are each affordable if you think they're appropriate, and if you may not even want to make this decision today. But so we broke this memo down then into 4 decisions for you to consider, and that the rest of it is just information about our process. So if you all want to add anything to that.
I guess I just had a comment or a few thoughts. One thing was on the page 4, the first page of this. It was surprising to me. We had 56 applicants that the committee reviewed, and 41. Well, it whittled down. The numbers went whittled down, and we ended up with 33. And I thought that was very surprising with as open-ended as the process was. I'm not arguing with the way it was whittled down. It's just surprising to me that there was that many people who ended up without.
There are 4 at the end.
Right.
We're just waiting to hear back from them.
Okay.
So
37.
Your point is still well taken.
I don't know what my point is worth, but it was just a surprising difference to me, and something I didn't know whether anyone, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Anne, but being a member of the committee, whether you had any thoughts on that. Right.
Yeah, I think that top of page 5, I had starred the statement, eligibility requirements are too narrow, as many who receive services would also benefit from specific assistance. And that was something that I felt, I mean, we had a mandate that there were eligibility requirements, which I don't remember being asked to vote on the eligibility requirements. They were given to us. Okay, I don't remember. And if I did vote for that restriction, I apologize, because with more thought, I don't think there should be eligibility requirements. But that's my opinion at this time. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. How was the information that there is this money available disseminated? How did people learn of it?
Well, Lynn and Kim, maybe you can refresh our memories on that.
So there is a list of people that are waiting on the PUNS list with no services. And so we worked with the Regional Planning Commission to spread the word. DSC sent information to people on their waiting list. Community Choices did the same. And then we sent applications to the people that we knew were waiting on the PUNS list with no services. So we actually mailed them the application itself. And there was also an ad in the newspaper and on our website.
So the original idea is this is targeted to people who are on a waiting list, which seemed like a good idea at the time.
So your point is well taken, and you aren't the only one who has brought that point up to our attention. So it could be done differently in the future. But I think what compelled us was at the end of last year, Kim had, a full year of data about, like really kind of granular data about service activities and where specific people were receiving activities. So we looked at 26 cases of people who were seemed to be receiving a lot of services, and we looked at the various costs. And that was really interesting, but what was more interesting was that there were over 200 people eligible but not receiving any services. And so what was compelling is, do we know if those people are safe? That's all. And you know, from meeting some of them, it seems like people are okay. Like they're relying on families and friends. So that's important for us to understand, but it may be that people are okay. But we don't know until we ask. But I think it's kind of like ethically, like if you collect information and then you see that there are a lot of people not getting services, it is important to explore that and see if they're okay. And they're all enrolled with the Independent Service Coordination Unit. So that's one of the things we'll hear about a little bit later is what they're doing to catch up with people. So.
All right, any other discussion before we get to the board action? All right, so we have four specific motions to approve here, starting with application 12. And we have a motion to approve full purchase of bike trailer as was originally requested by application 12. So, okay. We have a second. Any discussion of this? So we did give them 2,000. 5,000 was requested, but the total additional expenditure would be $2,090.52, if I got that correct. So we're still under the 5,000 that would have been what we had limited. Let's see, what was the reason that they weren't given the total in the first time around?
I think this is the right one. Mark told me that they didn't, what the committee had to work with, it wasn't clear that the family wouldn't, that they wouldn't be able to. Is this the right one or is it the Terra Trek? Oh, it's the other one. Okay, so it could be that there wasn't enough information. But that's not what he didn't tell me about this one. He told me about the other one. Okay, so I don't know. Do you know?
Yeah, I think we don't have all the information on this one. I don't remember. There were so many of them, and we dealt with them each individually. at the time, and I don't remember why this was whittled down. Did they have other requests that were granted for this individual or family?
No, I believe the bike trailer was the only request.
We've been doing a little bit of case management for some folks, but yeah, I think it was just, we'll pay for part of the bike trailer, I believe was the logic, because it was because it was $4,000, and so I think y'all were trying to make the money go further. Maybe. Do you remember?
That's what I was going to say. I think it was more so we were just trying to make the money go further for the amount of requests that we got. And it was for that reason.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So all in favor of this motion to
roll call?
Oh, the roll call.
Because it's money.
That's right. Excuse me.
Anne Robin.
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster.
Yes.
Gail Kennedy.
Yes. So that motion is approved. Moving on to the next, the motion to approve purchase of a Terra Trike Rover IA Tandem with IPS as originally requested in application 32 in place of the approved item.
That's the one Mark told me about. On this one, Mark said that his memory was that there wasn't enough information in the application to even know to ask the follow-up question. So we didn't ask the follow-up question until Kim contacted the family, and then she learned that it was this specific model. Was it you or Stephanie? Okay, when Stephanie spoke with the family, she learned that this child can't use a tricycle. This is the bike that was, I don't know if a doctor helped them find this or if it was something like that, but it was very specifically for this, and the purpose is so that this child can join the family when they go on bike trips. So it's, you know, it's got some clear social and health benefits, but that information wasn't really clear in the application.
Speaking as an avid cyclist and exerciser myself, I think these are really good applications, and but people often have aspiration for high-end equipment that they think they're going to use, and then it sits in the basement or it sits in the garage. This happens over and over and over. So I think I'm going to speak in favor of approving this as an aspirational thing, and I think we should have very good follow-up with the people that we help them purchase this expensive equipment and make sure that they're actually using it and it's satisfying their needs.
No, thank you. So I guess we still need a motion to approve this in a second. And
okay, I spoke before the motion. So moved.
And I will second the motion.
Thank you both. and we've had our discussion. Any further discussion at this point? All right. Roll call vote then, please.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Anne Robin?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes. Third, motion to approve request from application number 44 for funding of original request as described above. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I will second it.
Thank you. Discussion.
Same comment.
And there was a comment I was going to make on this one in particular,
yeah,
as well, because I remember our discussion previously as we looked through the applications. Do we have anything else that helps us make this decision differently from the request that the family has sent in this time? Any further information?
Yeah, I guess I would like to have, in this case, before approving it, I would like to have the individual say, yes, I want this, rather than the family saying, we want this for our
individual
family member, because our family member's weight is a real concern for us. You know, using exercise equipment at home takes tremendous motivation to do. Speaking for myself, I will say that. Should we get
that.
A little more information? I would like to hear from the individual.
So more information is requested, and that allows us to move on to the fourth one.
Do you want to vote?
What would we be voting on?
That's right.
More.
I guess you each would you would say what you want. Yes, no.
Okay, I move more information.
I would also like to see more information.
I agree. More information.
The fourth, motion to approve request for application number 46 to purchase gym membership rather than the previously approved karate school and uniform, weight machine, and bike. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion on this?
I think we again need to have some follow-up, which I guess is in the cards already to have this follow-up, that it's going to be used, that the gym membership will be used.
So this one is a little bit different. This was originally what was approved was equipment and a karate class membership and uniform. So this isn't asking for something that was denied before. It's just asking for the change. So we can bring this back in. So you would like it back with information from the individual in the same way as the last
one?
Yes. Okay. It's a little bit different because so you want it to come back with more information?
No, we're looking for follow-up, not more information before we approve it. We're looking for follow-up. Am I right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
and I agree with that. I think yes, we don't need to do anything different or know anything different right now to approve this change, and it's cost neutral. So let's go ahead with a roll call to approve or deny this, or other, if you so choose.
I'm sorry. I got confused. Got it. Thank you. Okay. I'm sorry. I want to correct what I wrote before. All right. Ann Robin. Georgiana Schuster?
Approved.
Gail Kennedy?
Approved.
Thank you.
All right. So this allows us to move on, and the next thing in our agenda is the mid-year progress reports. That's what is on the agenda here after mini grants and upcrest. Oh, did we want to change? Okay. Sorry. Okay. And the presentation, well.
Yeah, the mid-year progress report is a presentation.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Katie Harmon. I work at Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. I'm one of the community services program managers there, and I directly oversee all of the disability services at RPC. So today I'm just going to give a brief overview about the expansion of our program, the new services that we've been providing beginning this fiscal year. So I'm not going to touch on the services that we've been funded to provide in years past and really just focus on the person-centered planning component of our program. Just a quick brief overview. So we are one of eight independent service coordination agencies in Illinois. This was reduced. There used to be 17 down to 8 beginning July 1st of 2019. So previously for 30 years, 25 years, we had been serving Champaign, Ford, and Iroquois counties. So starting July 1st of 2019, we expanded to 13 counties, which are all listed here. So that was quite the expansion of our program. And this was for our Department of Human Services Division of Developmental Disabilities funded program, but I think it's good to have the context of how our state funded services and what we do as a state funded ISC agency and how that relates to what we do in our program funded through the DD board. This is again just a couple quick notes. So previously in FY19, we started doing person-centered planning and conflict-free case management with folks who were enrolled in DSC's Community First program, and that was a new thing we were doing last fiscal year. So in this fiscal year, what we did is expand that particular service, the person-centered planning, case management, to individuals who were receiving services through other agencies funded by the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. So we have currently three full-time case managers who are working with a variety of different agencies funded, but the main agencies are Developmental Services Center, Community Choices, PACE, Rosecrans Dual Diagnosis Program, and who am I forgetting? I think that might be everybody. Yeah, I think that's everybody. Target populations, what we did when we were approved for this funding, we set up meetings with the other agencies to kind of discuss how this was going to roll out and how we were going to collaborate and what this would look like. So the main criteria is that the person had to be enrolled on the PUNS waiting list, and they had to be, they were receiving some sort of service through a program funded through the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. And so what we did is we worked closely with the agencies that I mentioned to see who were who was enrolled in the services. We sent out letters to those individuals explaining what our agency, if they weren't from, most of them were familiar with regional planning because they were already on PUNS, so they knew us from that context. But what we were trying to do through this program, so you know, I think initially it may have been a little confusing for people, just kind of, you know, clarifying what our role is and what we could support people in doing, but I think over time that has smoothed out some as we're, you know, 6 months, 7 months into the fiscal year. I'm not going to touch on this long, but our other component of our program funded through the DD board is we do these two other things. So we have transition consultant services. So we have two part-time staff who work closely with Champaign County High Schools and helping families and individuals prepare for transition from high school to services in the community. And then also we work with people who are registering on the PUNS database to complete a preference assessment. We use that data and provide it to the board every year, which really dictates what services people are looking for in the community, what they'd like to see more of, what services they're currently receiving, that type of thing. And that's been something we've been funded to do for a while now. I kind of already touched on this, but we're essentially really modeling what we're doing at the state level that's required through the Department of Human Services and federal Medicaid guidelines to do person-centered planning and conflict-free case management. So I'll get into more specifically what that means. But this is mandatory for all ISC agencies across the state of Illinois. So we're kind of in a unique situation where we can be providing these services, mirroring what's happening at the state level to and working with people who don't yet have state-funded Medicaid waiver services but are getting services locally funded through the DD board. A couple of the things that we talked about in our application and some of the benefits of providing this support, you know, obviously in an ideal situation, the people that we're working with, they're on PUNS. Hopefully at some time they will be selected from PUNS, and so they will have already been working with our agency and familiar with what we do. They're going to need to work with us as an ISC agency once they get the state funding. So that transition has gone smoothly. So for people that we've been working with who are getting services funded through the DD board and then get a PUNS selection letter, they already know our agency. They're already familiar with the person-centered planning process, what that looks like. That's going to be required. So it's helped with a smoother transition. And also, if they're already working with us too, the goal would be to have a quicker transition to getting that state funding once they're selected from PUNS. There's quite a lengthy process of information that we need to gather to submit to the state once someone is selected from that waiting list. And so if they're already working with us, we've already, you know, ensured that they've applied for Medicaid. They have to have done that before we can submit an application for through the state. Ensure that they've had a recent physical, a recent psychological evaluation that's required. So we can get kind of all those initial logistical paperwork, procedural things in place. So that way there's not a delay once people are selected from the PUNS list to getting them the services and the funding. Because for some people that can take quite a bit of time. That is something that Mary Rasher, who works with people who are registering on PUNS, tells people, you know, apply for Medicaid as soon as possible, get that in place, because there has been, we've seen a lot of delays if people are waiting to apply for Medicaid. That's probably one of the biggest barriers. Or we contract with a couple different licensed clinical psychologists who do an evaluation, and sometimes it can take a bit of time to get that coordinated and get that report back, but we need that in place. So again, this program is helping ensure that we're kind of being more proactive and getting those things in place for the people that we're working with. I already mentioned, I mentioned the agencies that we've been working with closely. We were working with UCP, as you all know, prior to their closure, and played a role in working with those folks to make sure that they had services in place, after many lost their job coaching. And I have one story that I'm going to highlight about that and the kind of what we did and what our role was on that. Let's see here. So the case management support, I want to just briefly highlight some of the other things that we do. Linkage and referral to community resources, other DD, whether that's DD provider agencies, CU special recreation, respite services, internal regional planning commission programs. So at regional planning commission, we have a variety of other programs outside of DD services, so power bill assistance, rent assistance. We can make internal referrals for those types of resources. Exploring living housing options, we can get people registered on the statewide referral network for affordable housing. Our case managers who work in this program are now trained on how to do that. Openings within the Champaign County Housing Authority, applying to Medicaid, SSI, other eligible benefits. And then we've had this come up a few different times, but if we're working with somebody and their situation changes and it may turn into a bit of a crisis situation, we can make that internal referral to one of our state-funded ISC case managers to get them materials together to apply for crisis funding through DHS, Division of Developmental Disabilities. And that's been a smooth transition when that has happened. A couple of other things that we do, it's called the ICAP, but it's an inventory for client and agency planning. This is required Once people are selected from the PUNS list that they need to do every year, so we do that. We're averaging caseload size between 40 and 45 individuals. I think in our application we said we were going to, you know, estimate around 40. It's been like more 45-ish. We're currently serving a total of 124 clients just with this service. We've completed 34 personal plans with the people that we're working with through December. And that number is a little bit low, and that is because we really had to do extensive training with our case managers on the person-centered planning process. There's a lot of different in-person trainings that we do when we have new staff, webinars that they need to watch, shadowing with other case managers, that type of thing. But now we're pretty solid and up and running. So, you know, our goal is that every single person that we're working with will have a person-centered plan completed by the end of this fiscal year. This is just kind of a breakdown of the providers that the person served are enrolled in. And keep in mind that some people are enrolled in multiple programs with different providers. So there's the breakdown there. I want to highlight, too, that we're working with 14 people who do not currently have a service provider. Some of those folks were previously connected to other agencies, and there was a variety of different reasons, but they were no longer participating. They didn't want to continue participating, or a variety of things came up. And so what we did is asked if they still wanted to work with us, did they still want an independent service coordinator to help with case management and linkage to other service providers, and they reported yes. So that's what we're doing with those 14 folks, which I think is, you know, telling of, just continuing to work with people, because the question originally was, should we continue working with them? They're not connected with the service provider. Reported they still wanted to work with ASC. Is my microphone not working? Okay. Sorry. Thanks. I'm not going to highlight this too much. This was those who've heard my presentations for the last couple years. I think this is just helpful to know what conflict-free case management means. That word that's thrown around a lot, and it's, you know, you're like, what is that? Essentially, it just means that the case management functions must be performed by someone other than a relative of the person served, other than a direct provider of the service, and someone who doesn't have a financial interest in a provider or is employed by a provider agency. So this is federal Medicaid and Medicare guidelines, and this is what trickled down to the states across our country, and in Illinois, this is what was implemented in 2017, which resulted in independent service coordination agencies being responsible for developing the person-centered plan for people. This is just the process that we go through. We follow the state's And I just set them all over here.
There's another presenter.
Let's make the break. Yeah. Okay. No problem. Thank you. So I'm not going to go into this in too much detail. Many of you are very, very familiar with this. But we start with the discovery process and really getting to know the people that we're working with, what's important to them, what services they want, what services they might need, what are their goals that they want to be working on over the next year. And that can take course over several meetings, face-to-face, phone calls. It really depends on the person. Sometimes, it's not working again? I don't know what to do. Okay. So we meet with people in their homes. Sometimes they want to meet at different places in the community. Hello? Okay. And they might want to meet at DSC, for example, or Community Choices, and so we really try and be flexible. I did put a link to the state's person-centered planning policy and guideline, essentially the policies and procedures, if you so choose to want to peruse that. The personal plan, This is, it's really supposed to be a very comprehensive, kind of detailed plan. It can be several pages. There's key areas in the personal plan, you know, family and relationships and way, you know, employment, things like that. And so the information essentially that we gather from the discovery process is used then to develop the personal plan. And in the personal plan then, we work with the person that we're serving to see what they want to be, you know, what outcomes, what goals they have over the next year. And then we work closely with the provider agency to advocate on their behalf of, hey, is this something that you can support this person in meeting over the next year? Maybe it's getting a job in the community. Maybe it's learning the MTD bus route. You know, it's quite varied. I do have a list of just some examples of outcomes that we've worked with people on identifying over the last 7 months. And I, of course, didn't include people's names to protect confidentiality, but these are just some examples of outcomes from some of the personal plans. Someone wants to focus on budgeting and learn to pay bills to live independently. Someone wanted a community employment job. Working with family and apartment services to maintain his environment, strengthening communication skills. So they vary quite a bit here, and I have some continued on this next page. Another focus on community employment. Someone wanted to identify housing actually outside of Champaign because they had a lot of family supports in a different area. So the ISC worked really closely with that person to find housing in another town, which I didn't include. It's a small town, and I just, again, protect confidentiality. Again, I'm learning MTD bus routes in order to allow for more independence. So this is just some examples of the outcomes that are being developed through the person-centered plan. It's required that everyone has one outcome, and that's the state guidelines. It could be a maintenance outcome, though. It could be, you know, so-and-so wants to maintain their job or something like that. That's a really brief example. And some people identify, you know, 15 outcomes that they might want to work on, and then we work with the different provider agencies. And, of course, you know, they might not be able to help with all 15 of those outcomes, so we may work with that person and identify maybe the top five that they'd like to focus on this year and have that kind of conversation with the different agencies. I know there's a lot of information on here, but I thought it was nice to highlight a couple different success stories that has come up. This is a person who, again, was looking for housing in a different community outside of Champaign, and his mother was very supportive of that, to be closer to family. So the ISC worked closely to help make phone calls and look at available affordable housing in that particular area. And they actually, within a couple weeks after submitting an application for an affordable housing unit in this community, so the individual would pay 30% of his income towards his rent. So it was a great situation with his income. And they were approved. And within 1 month, he ended up moving in his into his own apartment in the community closer to, in this particular community, closer to family and friends. And the ISC was very involved in that situation. This is, I'll just summarize this, but this was a particular example of someone who was supported by UCP and how when UCP closed, it did, you know, it did have an impact. So he had a job that he had maintained for a couple years and worked really closely with his UCP job coach. And then when UCP closed suddenly, he was left without the supports he really needed to maintain employment. So the ISC in this situation worked really closely with that employer. He was getting some disciplinary action at work. There were some challenges without the job coach. So the ISC worked with the employer to explain, we're looking at connecting to other service providers that will hopefully be in place soon. And the employer was great and really supportive and, you know, willing to kind of forego any further disciplinary action or, you know, losing his job because she understood what we were trying to do and that, you know, it wasn't his fault that he lost the job supports. And so since then, he has been connected with a service provider to get to get the services that he needs to maintain his job. So that was a difficult transition, but again, it was helpful to have that open communication with our agency and the employer, and both, of course, the person that we were serving and his mother, just to explain how we could help support him and kind of ensured that we were looking for other providers and gave referrals and that type of thing. So that ended up working out very nicely in the end. Not all employers may not be that supportive, but you know, I still think it was a success. And that's all I have briefly about the new expansion of our program. Are there any questions that I can answer or anything I can clarify?
Thank you for that excellent presentation, and thank you for the handout.
Thank you.
I do have a question about recent experience with people applying for Medicaid, mm-hmm. Because I know people that are not DD that are having great difficulty applying for Medicaid, and I wonder if your clients are experiencing that and how you're dealing with that.
Yeah, that's a great question, and the answer is yes. We have faced a lot of different challenges, essentially getting a couple different things, getting Medicaid applications processed and turned around in a timely manner. We've had people try and do the online application and can't get past a certain step because there's a credit verification and people might not have credit history. It's just really a nightmare. Previously, within the Department of Human Services Division of Developmental Disabilities, they had a little Medicaid hub within their unit where we had a contact directly, where if we were working with somebody who is experiencing any type of Medicaid problem, we could connect to the hub and they would problem solve it fairly quickly. There's only two or three staff working in this little unit. Unfortunately, starting December 1st of 2019, that Medicaid hub transitioned to a different unit. And now our staff are having tons of problems, again, getting a response. It's actually been a real challenge. All of the ISC program directors from across the state recently met with the new director of DHS-DD, Allison Stark. And so we conveyed some specific examples of the challenges that people were experiencing, and so each agency was charged with compiling a list of specific examples and how it's impacting individuals and families, and so we're in the process of this was just last week sending her that information. So I'm not sure what will come of that. It's unfortunate because when that hub was in that division of DD, again, we were able to get situations resolved fairly quickly, and now it's not been so great, to be honest. So hopefully with some advocacy, things will change. We've had staff going to the local office too. We have a contact with the local office and still sometimes not getting responses or it's not getting processed quickly. If someone's in a crisis situation, so they're at risk for abuse, neglect, or homeless, in the past, those applications have been prioritized, and they would process those quickly and get us a quick turnaround if the person didn't have Medicaid, and that's not happening anymore. So again, we're just doing our due diligence, and hopefully with Director Stark now understanding the issue, there will be some changes. But that's a great question. It's a problem. I don't know if any other the provider agencies here have experienced that at all, but I know we have. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And next up, we have a presentation from Spring Behavioral Health.
large stack of things out of clients, and my flash drive is mixed into those things. So just give me 1 second here. So my name is Kyla Woods. I am the behavior clinician here in Champaign County for Spring Health, Behavioral Health, and Integrated Care. Just want to make this as brief as I can so I don't overwhelm you. Behavior is sometimes kind of overwhelming. Just a quick background about myself. I've been working in the field of ABA for about 4 years now. I've worked in a variety of different positions. I've been a registered behavior technician, a case manager, and now I'm a behavior clinician through DHS. I have experience working with young kids, doing direct therapy, adolescents, and adult clients. I do have training experience, so training different RBTs, caregivers in home settings, and agency staff, school staff. And my areas of interest that I work very closely with, behavior reduction, so addressing challenging behaviors that we often do see in clients, functional communication training, so increasing communicative skills that are more appropriate in a vast variety of ways, so sign, using augmented communication devices, PECs, different things like that, organizational behavior management, so training staff on different behavior reductions, behavior skill acquisition, and things like that. And also acceptance commitment therapy, that's something that I do favor a lot, which is the addressing of private events in more flexibly thinking individuals. So those things that we might overlook, anxieties that might cause a behavior, things like that. So the formal definition of ABA is the science in which tactics are derived from behavior principles and they are applied to socially significant behavior. And there's also an experimentation side of ABA that use techniques to identify the variables that are responsible in the improvement of behavior. So we basically are using behavior principles, so motivation, reinforcement, to change behaviors that impact our environment in any type of way. So utilizing skill acquisition, so acquiring new skills in combination with behavior reduction, if necessary, by replacing inappropriate or challenging behaviors, this is how we generally impact those behaviors. And socially significant behaviors include social skills, language skills, academics, daily living, self-care, vocational, leisure, and coping skills. So we really can touch on a variety of different things. So Spring Health as a whole, we also utilize person-centered strategies. By providing an innovative approach to behavior and intervention services, we work closely with clients, guardians, and different interdisciplinary teams to provide the highest quality of care that we possibly can with our clients. So sorry, guys. So at Spring Health, we specialize in providing empirically supported and peer-reviewed behavior and intervention services. So ABA is extensively researched. There's tons of research on functional communication training, increasing different skills like in school settings and vocational settings. So we do utilize a lot of very densely researched strategies. So in the skill acquisition portion, we can do like daily living building, skill building. So how do we load a dishwasher? How do we wash our clothes? How do we transport ourselves from A to B? Functional communication, so increasing those appropriate communication skills. so that we might not engage in problem behavior or that we are able to access things that we want or need. Vocational skills training, as well as behavior reduction. So we see aggression, elopement behaviors, SIB. Those are just a couple things that we do touch on. Like I said, I don't want to overwhelm too much. And these are the services that we provide. They include parent training, staff training, group and individual ABA therapy. So that's the direct training with the client themselves. School consultation, client advocacy, behavior assessment and consultation, behavior support plan development and monitoring, and social skills. And we currently accept, through the private insurance spectra, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Cigna, Health Alliance, HealthLink, Humana, TRICARE, United, and Aetna. And then for our adult clients, we do accept the CILA and home-based waiver, and we do accept children and adolescents who get supportive waivers and residential waivers as well. So just to talk a little bit about the behavior reduction side, we do implement BSPs, or Behavior Support Plan, and these are just plans that outline the strategies that we can use to increase appropriate behaviors and reduce or replace challenging behaviors. So that's, again, using that functional communication for an example. So if you have a client who might be engaging in aggression for attention-seeking things, we would use functional communication to have them then say, hey, I need you, rather than, you know, come and aggress towards you. That would be an example of that. So the behavior support plan has different components and outlines, but the main parts are the target behaviors. So these are the behaviors that we are aiming to change, the behavior reduction goals, so the goals that are set to indicate that there is a change in the behavior, and the strategies that are utilized to achieve the desired behavior change. So in that, we have antecedent interventions. So these are what we use prior to the behavior, taking that proactive step before the behavior would occur. Replacement behavior, so those alternative or incompatible behaviors. And consequence intervention, so the reactive approach. How do we reinforce the behaviors we want to see when they happen versus taking the reinforcing operation away from the ones that we don't want to see? And then talking a little bit about the skill acquisition, while the behavior reduction is a really important component, it's really nothing without skill acquisition, and I really want to stress that because when people think ABA or behavior services, the first thing they think is challenging behavior. My client has challenging behavior, they need behavior services. And that's not always the case. I work with a lot of clients who have very minimal behaviors, and we're doing a lot of skill building. And it looks different for everybody. I have one client, you know, we put together a Christmas tree, and we talked about how we can compare ourselves to Christmas trees. And it looked really different than, you know, I was doing direct training with expressive language with another client, and we just had cards on the table. It was really basic. So behavior looks very different across the board. So I do want to stress that just because, you know, it's not like a grave, you know, aggressive situation or elopement behavior, that, you know, the skill acquisition component is very, very important, and it's a big part of what we do as well. So we do use different skill building assessments, and again, these look very different. Some of the ones that we do use are the Peak Relational Training System by Mark Dixon. He's a BCBAD, or board-certified behavior analyst with a doctorate, the Role Behavior Assessment and Placement Program, the Assessment of Functional Living Skills, the Social Skills Menu, and the Children's Psychological Flexibility Questionnaire. I've used this with several of my adult clients to work on that flexible thinking component as well. So, like I said, I didn't want to make it too long and be a little too overwhelming, but I hope I gave you guys a good idea of what we are able to provide and what we can do. And if you guys have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer anything that we might have.
So how are you integrated into the service providing system? How do clients add access you, and I see that you're insurance supported. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
So we mostly run through referrals. So I know on the insurance side, the private insurance side, we mainly see children with autism. So once they receive an autism diagnosis, a lot of times they'll get a referral from their diagnosing doctor for ABA services. And from there, they can seek referral from, you know, I know there are several, you know, agencies in Champaign County that provide ABA services to clients. So we provide our information to the doctors. They can refer us from there. I know on the adult side, for the most part, with the waivers, they get the 104 hours of behavior services. So I know I've worked with a few SS here they need behavior services for their clients. So it is definitely a big referral process. And I did provide on this next slide, my state director, Susie Finnegan, she's the best contact for referral. If you have anybody that you think might benefit from services, I would definitely contact her. She's got the most information on that part of our services.
And just a hopefully very quick question. What's the capacity that you have for our community?
That is a really good question. So this is, I'm now stepping into this side. I worked with youth for a really long time. So, and I know for a long time, we worked mainly in the Vermilion County area. That's a really big service provider in that range. But with me being in Champaign County, from what I've seen, it's a very big, active community with adults. And I want to make sure that that population doesn't go unnoticed and unseen. Because I know, especially in ABA, it's very, like, child-driven. It's very easy to get services for kids with autism, and they are pretty much the cream of the crop, really, like, when you see ABA services. So I wanted to make sure that I'm hoping I'm not, you know, tiptoeing around your question. I'm wanting to make sure that I'm making myself available to as many clients as I can in Champaign County to make sure that everybody is getting a good amount of services from every, you know, aspect, if that answers your question. I hope that I didn't tiptoe around it.
Thank you. Are there questions from other members of the non-board members who would like to ask?
Hi there, I'm Patty Walters and I'm at DSC.
Okay.
We currently have somebody that's seeking support from Spring Health, currently mm-hmm. receiving support from SST, mm-hmm. which is support service teams through DHS. Can you talk about just for a second what the difference is between those two services, and
yeah.
are there different circumstances where DHS would recommend one over the other?
Okay, yeah. I do know that SST is more of a temporary service, almost like a crisis service provider, whereas Spring Health is a more long-term service provider. So we would do more extensive, like, monitoring on the behavior, especially with goals. So, like, if you are, for example, if you have somebody engaging in, you know, 100 instances of, you know, verbal aggression a month, then we would monitor that behavior, put in the behavior to decrease to, like, 50. Once it's at 50, okay, what are we going to do now to get it to 25? Mm-hmm. So it's more of a long-term intervention process than the SST would be. I know we do work with Alicia, I believe, mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a transition program. Like, we would work closely with her and then transition over to provide services on a more long-term, closely monitored basis.
So are you seeing that most people start with SST and then it transitions to Spring Health, or?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on the situation. I know some clients just get a referral from their guardian or their case manager, depending on, like, what behaviors they might be seeing, or if they think it would be beneficial to build different skills. I did have a client referral in the other county I work in who just wants a job in the community. So what can we do to help them build the skills to get there? So I know it doesn't necessarily always have to be in, like, those kind of circumstances, like a crisis type of situation. I think it kind of depends on the situation the client might be in.
Okay. and I don't want to dominate. I mean, I think we can talk another time. It would be
okay,
good for our clinical team to kind of have maybe a powwow or something with you.
Absolutely, yeah.
As this one, I mean, right now, like I said, there's just one person that's pursuing it, and I don't think that it's started yet, but SST is already involved. And one of my questions was, you know, they've got a counselor and they've got SST, and now they're seeking Spring Health and how to integrate.
Right.
Or is there, you know, for all those recommendations to support someone, or if there's a conflict with that much.
Right.
So that's one of the things that I'd like to follow up with.
Absolutely, yeah. And it never wants to be too overwhelming. I think sometimes it's, for everybody, it's very overwhelming when there's, like, a ton of different entities who feel like they're doing all of the same thing. Exactly. So I think working, again, closely with the different disciplines to know, like, okay, so what are you guys doing? How can I closely imitate what you're doing on a, you know, a more of a long-term basis? Because, again, in those kinds of situations, I don't want to come in and then say, okay, we're going to do this, and then you see a huge surge in the behavior because I'm implementing something differently than they were doing. And then you see what we would call an extinction burst when the behavior was decreasing, and then it's just right back to where it was. So I think working closely together and kind of seeing, like, okay, where were you guys at? What were you seeing? And then knowing, like, where to go from there, I think is a good, like, very important part of, you know, not only having the behavior service, but using that interdisciplinary component of, like, we're all working together as a team to benefit this one person. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate your coming to the meeting today and giving us this information.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is on page 9, the Carl Foundation property tax case ruling.
This is for information only. There's no decision to be made, but the importance of it is there's an impact on the fund, but not on the current year budget. So at the very bottom, you are listed as developmental care. That's, for, you know. The fund has different names in some places, but that's us. And at the end of March, $176,585, roughly, will be returned. That's going to happen at the end of March. But that is right now in reserved fund balance. So, I mean, we've been, each year we plan for, you know, a favorable tax ruling or an unfavorable tax ruling, and this money was collected between 2005 and 2011. This represents 4 of the Carl parcels. What could happen next, and it might even happen quickly, are decisions related to 5 other Carl parcels and presents, and we have additional money in reserved fund balance that should be enough to cover those decisions, and if they come quickly, we'll just keep presenting you with this information. There is a question if other county departments need to reach into current year appropriations to pay back what they owe. That would also be a question asked on our behalf. So there's a chance that there could be an impact on the current year budget, but I believe we've set aside as much money as they've recommended each year. So it has no impact on business as usual. It's just leaving the reserved fund balance.
All right. If there's no question from the other board members about that information, we will move on to page 10, which is the 2021 applications for funding.
Kim organized this chart according to the priority area identified. That's something we started doing a couple of years ago, and I'm not sure if that's more helpful to you all, but it's helpful to us, so I don't know. If you'd like to see it in a different presentation, we can do that. But anyway, the chart might be a little bit confusing because the Mental Health Board funds a couple of these programs currently. The Mental Health Board also expressed a specific interest in these type of programs going forward, or at least for this coming year. So it's the early childhood related programs. They're currently funded by the Mental Health Board for the most part, and would probably be funded by the Mental Health Board for the coming year if they are approved.
So is this information only, or are we asked to do anything at this time? This is information. Okay.
Two questions. Will there, I mean, this is closed now, correct? There will be no other requests coming through. And it looks like the total between the 2 years is down slightly this year from last year. I was trying to spot where that is. Is that all the money that would have gone to PACE and UCP that makes up that difference predominantly or exclusively? And mm-hmm. I see that there's increases in percentages of some of the requests, not all of the requests, but okay. But no other programs that other than PACE and UCP that did not apply this year that have applied in years past. Am I correct? Well, thank you.
Depending on how many years back you go, we have lost a couple of agencies in the last, I mean, I think we lost one this year. It was UCP. And then last year, CTF, which is still in business, but they're not requesting funding from us anymore, and IAMC before that. So we are losing agency capacity. That's also true in the mental health side. But so here's some bad news. This fund has hit its cap. So if it's truly under PTEL, there's a chance that next year's revenue would either not increase by very much, stay level, or even decrease. It's too early for us to have projections for you, but it's something we can start asking about in the next few weeks to understand what's available next year. And that impacts the decisions for this because these start July 1st, and we know what we have from July 1st to December 31st, but we don't know what's coming next. So before you have to make any decisions, I hope to have a nice solid number for you, but there's a chance it won't be a big increase as it has been in the past.
All right, next, board direction, discussion amongst ourselves about any thoughts. Having this sprung on me, I am unprepared to have any brilliant thoughts or ideas about new board direction. I didn't come with any prepared, but do either of the other board members have anything to contribute at this point?
Well, I'd just like to ask for guidance from staff as to what do you think we need to discuss with this? What would be helpful to you?
That was convenient. There's one right next to you there. All right. I'll accept the challenge. So this agenda item is always here in case, and it's really here just in case there is something that you need to talk about that we didn't capture. So it's fine not to do anything with it. But if you want to now, or if you want to do this later, we would be interested in what's going to be most helpful to you for making decisions about future funding. You know, we do these program summaries. They have quite a bit of detail. The particulars of the detail are kind of because of previous board questions or previous agency concerns. So the reason that we include something like pieces of personnel, particular personnel, may not be obvious to you, so it sometimes looks like too much detail. Some board members like to read every application. We can give you printed copies or access on the online system. Some board members would prefer to wait for staff observations or to ask the agencies questions. These are all, you may not be prepared to talk about that today, but I think we would invite that kind of input from you at any time.
All right. Well, due to the issue of time, I think if it's okay with the other two board members, we will think on that, bring information at other meetings, and move on to the next, which is the update from Illinois DHS DDD, which is for information only. Are there any discussions or comments on what was in here? I guess I found the chart at the end in the last 10 to 15 pages to be intensely overwhelming. But I think it probably contains information that I need to understand better. I'm not asking for that explanation right now. And I think I just, I need more time to read through that and figure out what it's telling me. Would you like to make a comment, Lynn? Please do.
This is the content of the webinar next Tuesday. So we have a conflict, but we'll split these tasks up. One of us will do the webinar, one will do the other meeting. I don't know that I'll understand it after the webinar either, but this is just a proposed transition plan for the state of Illinois to come into full compliance with the new federal regulations around integrated settings for all care. I used to have a contact who worked for the federal government who would say exactly what was wrong with our state's transition plan, but at the top of this new administration, she was told to stop talking to people about that. So I can't get that kind of nice shortcut to what we could do better. But this has to be done this year, and then the state has a couple of years to bring all of its programs into full compliance. So we'll be getting better information, better summary information about this in the next few months.
Right, if there's no further comments, then the next portion is successes and other agency information.
Hi, Annette Becker from DSC. Just asking you all to put on your social calendar March 7th from 3 to 5 at the Crow at 110. We're having an open house. As we continue to help people look at non-traditional employment opportunities, there's a lot of excitement in our art groups for making personal care items in addition to art. Excuse me. There's like I said, a lot of energy, so as people are involved in the groups and they're identifying things that they want to sell, and what we're finding is that a lot of the people who are interested in this method of employment are people who have not been successful or who have not been interested in more traditional employment. So come on out. I've personally used some of the soap. It's really good stuff. So hope to see you there. Thank you.
When is that and where is that?
March 7th from 3 to 5. The Crow at 110. The address is 110 East University in Champaign, and the best place to park is, you can park, I think, in Habitat Restore in their parking lot, and then also there's some parking in front and on some of the side streets to the east of the building.
Hi, I'm Becca Wachowski with Community Choices. I just want to share a little bit of good news. We've been working with a number of individuals for a while, and two people in the last couple weeks have found jobs. One of them was at FedEx, and one of them was at Casey's General Store, which were both things they were very interested in and excited about. So those things are both just getting off the ground, but it's going really well so far. And then I also just want to let you know that we're really excited to be hosting a strategic planning event with all of our members at the end of this month on the 27th. We did this about 18 months ago, not quite, and had the opportunity to just kind of check in with the families that we're working with and the individuals that we're working with to see what are the services that they need, kind of how they feel that our cooperative is supporting them and what they might be looking for. And this is sort of our opportunity to kind of come back to that and look at sort of the evolution of the organization. You know, we really want to allow the people that we are serving to provide a lot of direction there. So we don't know exactly what will come out of it because it is a planning session, but sort of as we kind of come together and sort of put together a timeline, we'll be sharing that with the whole community. So that is something we're really excited about, and we will be having more updates to come. So.
Hi, Caitlin with CU Able. I just wanted to give you an update on our Good 360 program that we recently did with Walmart, where we're taking Walmart's items that they have that they can't return to their manufacturer. We're offering them to individuals in the community. We've had a really good response. How we've been doing it is we set up a website. We take all of the product from Walmart. We sort it, take photos of it. We put it on our website. And then we have where people can shop. And it's all free. The only stipulation is it can't be sold. And it has to go to a family of someone with a disability. And they shop, and then they pick up the following week. We're in our third week of doing it. We have pickups this Sunday, and the program's been going really well.
Excuse me, is your shopping online shopping?
Yeah, we get all the items from Walmart, and we take photographs of them and upload them to a Square website. And they go on there, and they choose what they want. There's no cost. And then we manage the orders. We sort it all, and they pick it up at our storage unit. And we've had some really big-ticket items, really. We had a lot of Christmas trees from Christmas. We've had coffee pots, some home gym stuff. We recently got a bunch of
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
we might be able to.
Yeah.
It was like pull-up bar and like some like muscle toner stuff. It was very interesting. And we've also had recently we got a bunch of underwear, and it was all, of course, it's all new. A lot of times, like sometimes they'll have like one pair of underwear missing out of the package, so they can't return it to their supplier, so they give it to us. And we recently posted a lot of that, and that had great feedback. And I was surprised at, you know, how many people, but you wouldn't think about it. But that's something that maybe they're not splurging on something for themselves, like getting new underwear, that now we can give them to for free, which is awesome.
And where was that site, that website?
It's on our CU Able site. I can send you guys the link, but we post it on our Facebook group. I don't know if you're on Facebook. But we post it, and there's shopping hours. We start it at 8 p.m. on Friday, and it goes till I believe 8 p.m. on Sunday, and then everyone picks up the following Sunday. We've also recently had a bunch of electronic heaters, so that was wonderful during these cold times that we were able to give out a bunch of those.
All right, thank you. Old business. We've got the agency quarterly program activity reports. Again, I think because of time, we'll just keep moving forward. We've got the combined agency quarterly service data. We've got our schedules and timelines on pages 77 through 80. I believe you had something you wanted to point out there, Lynn, with a change.
The schedule is always a draft, but because we mostly rely on it, I thought I should tell you that the July meetings are different. They were originally scheduled for July 22nd, and now they're on July 15th, but to make things even more complicated, we've asked to have the DD meeting at 4 instead of 8 in the morning. There's a blood drive in this room at 8 in the morning, and an additional benefit of having you meet a little bit later is that it's my hope that some mental health board members could attend that meeting and possibly even attend theirs. There's even a small chance that you might want to have a combined closed session in between the two meetings. So I hope that's going to work for you all, because there are a few reasons that was important to me.
All right, and the acronym is in glossary, Mental Health Board input.
They have a meeting this evening. The agenda is roughly the same, except for one thing that's kind of important, and that is a number of the agencies funded by the Mental Health Board have had a really hard time meeting some of the requirements for financial accountability, and it really starts to boil down to some agencies have grown a lot, but their business offices have not. So I'm really happy that the DD set of agencies are meeting all their requirements. This set is doing really well, but it has called my attention to our rules, just to make sure that that our rules are fair, and that if there are other supports that we need to offer, that we can afford to do that. I think we're testing some new guidelines. They're new just as of this year, so we might start to see better outcomes for all next year. But I think the bottom line is that when we're running on really narrow indirect cost margins, the business office functions really do tend to be compromised. So that's all that's different. Otherwise, they've got a whole bunch of applications to think about now too.
Staff reports. Anything that needs to be shared?
I just wanted to remind the board that the Disability Expo is March 28th, and we are looking for people to volunteer.
All right. Thank you. Board announcements. I have none. Then, if there's nothing further, we are adjourned.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Oh, well.
Here's in your revised agenda. Okay. Sorry.
This does not appear in the original agenda. It's on the revised agenda. There's a call for a closed session, but the motion there is not quite correct. This is the correct motion. If you would like to read the motion.
I move to go into closed session pursuant to 5 ILCS 20/2C11 to consider litigation which is pending against or on behalf of Champaign County, and litigation that is probable or imminent against or on behalf of Champaign County, and that the following parties remain present: Executive Director Lynn Canfield and Associate Director Kim Bowdry. Right.
Voice vote.
All of who agree?
Yes,
aye. Any opposed? No. Thank you.
I will check to see if